Hey everyone, welcome to episode 163 of Randall A Radio. This is Dylan joining you on Sunday evening. Hope you had a wonderful St. Patrick's Day. And today I'm joined by the St. Patrick, our friend Pat, who I hope did not drink himself into oblivion this weekend, but hope you had a good time celebrating your own namesake. Pat, how are you doing, man?
I'm great. I have not drank since New Year's Eve, and I'm trying to make it the whole year.
Let's go.
I want to make it the whole year and just go on a whole bender next New Year's Eve.
just January 1st, 2025, you are going off.
December 31st, 2024, I will go insane.
Okay, 34. We'll leave you to New Year's Eve.
So, all right, yeah, New Year's Eve, I'm going to go on a complete bender, but I'm trying not to drink until then.
But 364 days is impressive. So
it's impressive. Yes. Especially for an Irishman. So
especially on an Irishman on St. Patrick's Day. Yeah,
exactly.
But it sounds like you had a good weekend regardless. We are going to hit on some news items today and kind of breeze through those and hopefully get to the Division Dandies preview series with the AL East and NL East. We told ourselves beforehand we want to be as concise as possible after failing miserably the first time just because we have too much insight and stuff to talk about. But we want to keep that tight because we know we have a couple things to hit beforehand. Big news of the week. There is a get ready to learn Korean buddy moment, except in probably the most positive way that's been described in Major League Baseball. Dylan Cease was traded to the Padres and has joined the team for their Korea series. You know, they're kind of, I guess, spring warm up and then opening to the season versus the Dodgers. He was traded from the White Sox for Drew Thorpe, Yairo Iriarte. He's kind of a tricky name. Outfielder Samuel Zavala and MLB reliever Steven Wilson. I don't think Cease is going to be pitching in Korea. You know, that would be kind of a big turnaround. And I think they probably have Musgrove and Darvish is my guess, some form of that. But the Padres end up using one of the key trade chips from, or I guess just like return pieces they got from the Juan Soto deal in order to parlay it into the biggest pitcher on the market, which is just like perfectly Padres,
Prellering. Yeah. Good for them on this deal, I guess. I mean, they're obviously going to contend for a wild card spot. They have no shot at the division in my mind, but
helps. Yeah, I would definitely put them as a front runner for, I think them and like the Phillies are definitely still like ahead, like by maybe a notch over everyone else as far as like the first teams down. Yeah. I could still see a universe where they could be with the Dodgers, but that universe is strictly like Shohei is still recovering from an injury and their entire rotation falls apart.
Yeah, you know? I'll say this. I feel like the Phillies have a better shot at the East than the Padres have at the West. Fair.
Yeah, I think that's probably reasonable. But I do respect, I mean, you know, if I think I said this in our, you know, like Slack channel, and I think if Preller, I would respect the hell out of Preller. I just wish he was better at his job. Like, could you imagine if Preller was good? You know, like, because he goes for it and he does some really bizarre things. Like, it sounded like the sky was falling with this entire team not long ago, you know, with like, oh my God, we got to get rid of all his money and we just traded all this stuff for Juan Soto and we didn't do anything with it. And then, you know, like, they get a pretty good return on Soto that helps them now and a little bit into the future. And then they parlay that into more short term help. And their farm system is still good enough to kind of withstand these blows, which I guess is kind of the key part of all this, right? They traded all these great players and they're still like, well, we have a pretty good farm system and a pretty good major league team. And that's kind of what everyone in the league wants, right? Like it's just like slightly worse than the Dodgers in both respects. And if you're just slightly worse than the Dodgers in both respects, then you're doing pretty well. The way they might have did it is not like the most impressive way of doing it, but I respect Preller's attempts to, we don't just have to go one way or the other. We can use assets to kind of build in different directions. And, so it's really fascinating, I think, at minimum.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting how they were able to turn Soto into Cease and still have, you know, guys left over. I mean,
yeah, probably, I was surprised Dylan Lesko wasn't in it.
Yeah, it's interesting how he manages his farm.
Yeah.
And just his trade. It's weird. Like,
It's very unique.
He defies all logic and expectations.
Yeah.
So
that's a good way of putting it. But yeah. You know, I appreciate him for the content, you know, if nothing else.
I mean, great of him to swoop in and steal him from the Yankees.
Absolutely. And especially, you know, like,
who need him now?
Case that half the teams that they're competing against directly would have probably liked to have C's too, you know? So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, and what did you think about the return that the White Sox got? I think it was, we talked about this dating back to our sim, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty on par with what I got in the sim.
Feels about right.
Yeah, it feels right.
Yeah, although you get a top 100 guy. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you get a top 100 guy. You get a guy who's outside the top 100. And then you get a guy that, you know, has potential to climb up the rankings. And you get a solid reliever there, too, which they could probably just flip at the deadline.
Yeah, it seems like they got a handful of guys that could be good. They kind of looks like they spread out, you know, like, they got three good guys instead of one great guy, you know, which there might also, you know, certain people might be pro that, against that, whatever, but it seems very likely that at least one of these guys should be like a regular for them. I know Drew Thorpe is someone I've really liked. I don't know if he's like a mega ace potential guy, but like,
I've always been a really big fan of Drew Thorpe, especially watching him come through the minors, because I'm able to easily see double A and triple A Yankees games.
Yeah.
So, like, every time I've seen him pitch, he's impressed me. So, yeah. I think this is a great get for the White Sox, who need some more pitching prospects in that system, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and they need a little bit of everything, but this definitely gives them a jolt in the rotation. And I think all of these guys will probably be viable within the next two or so years. You know, Iriarte might be another year off, but he's in double A or triple A.
I think Thorpe could be up this year.
Yeah, I think Thorpe could pitch this year. I mean, they might just have to. It depends on if they just, like, we don't want him to pitch because we're going to be a dumpster fire, or we need him to pitch because we're going to be a dumpster fire.
Right.
So I think it's, like, when it all kind of shakes out, I think the White Sox acquired some guys that definitely should make up for the value lost from Dylan Cease. I just wonder if any of them are going to hit that, like, upside, you know? But, like, you can't get that out of every trade necessarily. It's just something that I like to kind of try for. And I know Zavala has really good on base skills, you know, so all these guys bring something. Wilson was definitely the weirdest one, 'cause he's just like a reliever, but I think he was good last year. It's kind of like a weird, like, you know,
it's a solid reliever.
It's a strange get for a team that's going to be like bad to be like, yeah, why don't you throw in one of those relievers of yours? And it's like, okay, you know? So, we shall see how the White Sox fare, but you know, this was inevitable. It was going to happen at some point. They decided to do it before the season. I think that was the right decision. You know, just avoid any possible heartache, you know, from a Cease elbow injury or something like that. So,
definitely the right call.
It makes sense. Yeah. Some of the other big news this week, I mean, really the big news this week outside of the trade was Gerrit Cole, had a barky elbow is what I would describe it as, but an MRI done and a lot of, like, second opinion, third opinion. And it was when it kind of took a day or two for it to come out, like, what was happening necessarily. And it was eventually diagnosed with nerve inflammation and some other, like, there were some other words used that I'm not a doctor. I don't know, but it doesn't seem like it's like a sprain, which is like, you know, if you hear sprain or tear is when it's like a red, you know,
that's when flashing, you worry. Red
firing. He seems to have avoided that stuff. You know, nerve stuff tends to come from, you know, irritation in a ligament or like in that bone, you know, and stuff like that. So it can be bad, but the projection is that he'll be at least out for a few weeks, maybe a month or two, as they kind of figure things out. And the doctors seem to be like, oh yeah, they'll be, you know, we don't need to do any surgery on this, but like, you know, I'm sure one, Yankees fans, and two, fantasy baseball fans who drafted Gerrit Cole in the first round of their league, like, have been freaking out.
I did my draft tonight, and Gerrit Cole went in the 10th round. I was so mad I didn't grab him there. 10th
round is crazy. Yep. But, I mean, I think people are scared. You hear an elbow injury. Gerrit Cole is not young. He's, you know, he's 33. and he came off a great year, but, you know, like, I mean, he won a Cy Young, even though it wasn't necessarily like his best year of his career. I think it was just kind of, you know, he was the best guy, but
yeah,
I think other people, you know, other seasons might have been just as deserving as this one, but objectively a great season, you know, but, you know, coming off that, and then the Yankees having a disappointing season, it's like, all right, Cole is going to be a big part of this. And now it's like, well, you get Juan Soto and you potentially lose Garrett Cole. It's like, oh, great. So, you know, we'll see how long that takes for him to get back. He has dodged a bullet as far as any potential surgery. Hi, Stella. And, you know, do you think, I mean, if you have a little bit of Yankees fan in your heart, I know you've given a lot, some of that away just because you the Phillies have gotten so great. But, you know, if you're a Yankees fan, how concerned are you? One, just if you're trying to get through that first month or two of the season without him, right. And two, like, if it's worse than that, you know, because it feels like it always could be.
I mean, you got to be concerned. Like, this is the guy that you're paying over $300 million to be your staff ace. There's a lot of concern there, because this is a guy that, you know, aside from Aaron Judge, is the most important player to the team, you know?
Yeah.
So it's going to be significant, because this rotation does not have much depth. You know,
because they traded all of it to the Padres.
it's all with the Padres. Like, you know, Nestor is up and down. You know, we don't know what Nestor we're going to see this year.
And he's going to start opening day, which,
is, I guess, a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, it doesn't feel great. I mean, he could be good, but, you know.
He could, yes.
Who knows?
Carlos Rodon, I have no faith in. He's a train wreck in general. you're going to get 60 innings out of him if you're lucky. So, and then beyond that, like, Stroman. I don't even know who's... Stroman, and then I don't know who's in the rotation. Like, I genuinely don't know.
I think Clark Schmidt has to be locked in now. Oh,
yeah, Clark Schmidt's got to be locked in now, yeah.
And then
I think Schmidt could be good. But it's rough for that rotation. And I'm curious if they're actually going to look to meet Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell's asking price now.
Yeah,
definitely feels like hey, we have 1 year of Juan Soto. We need to do everything possible to not only win the World Series, but get to the playoffs to begin with.
Yeah, you can't really screw around when you have a team in a situation like this where, you know, I mean, you got to capitalize every minute you have Judge on the field. And, you know, if that's going to be with Luke Weaver starting games, it's like, dude, we're going to have to figure out something better here. So I would be very curious to see if they have, like, you know, even if it's like, hey, we're willing to do one of these short contracts where it's like a 1+1+1. Apparently, Blake Snell and company have been asking for. Blake Snell has, you know, basically just like Chapman and Bellinger have, right?
Yeah.
I think Houston was the last team tied to Snell, and we still don't have a agreement in place. So if those guys are available, you know, they need to be looking at that really hard if they want to have a chance. So, you know, we will get into kind of how we think that's going to affect them as far as the division. But obviously, I'm sure Yankees fans not feeling great, even though the bullet has been dodged for now. The last big note that I had was that spring training's kind of in this last, you know, week or two, especially, you know, the Dodgers and Padres are going to start playing, and the last teams are going to kind of fizzle out within the next week. But the MLB hosted its spring breakout games, which are these prospect only spring training games that were like televised. Like Baseball America even had some of them for streaming, which is really cool. Some of them were put on MLB TV, and notably the first game was the Pirates and the Orioles. It was Paul Skenes versus Jackson Holliday and the Orioles. It only lasted an inning as far as Skenes, but like I mentioned previously that I'm like, it doesn't surprise me that Skenes is going to minor league. He needs more seasoning, just, or like, it's just safe, you know?
Yeah.
But
he's nasty, man.
When you watch him, it's like, oh crap. Is he like, or should he just be starting like in a week? You know, I don't know. But he got Enrique Bradfield on three straight 101, 102 mile an hour fastballs. Then he got into a, 2-1 count with Jackson Holliday, then threw a slider past him, and then a changeup that dived away at 92 for a strikeout, and that's against Jackson Holliday. And then broke a dude's bat for the third out of the inning. So it's like, that's your one inning. It's like, oh my God, dude, this guy is a beast.
He's nasty, man.
So I think that was, that game was a really nice, you know, while it's maybe frustrating for Pirates fans to be like, you know, to have to wait for that, I don't think Paul could have done anything more to show like, hey, I'm not like these other pitching prospects. You know, I am different. I'm, you know, I'm bigger. I'm stronger than all of these guys. So definitely feels like a Gerrit Cole type, you know, ready to go a second time. They're just like, he's got the power to start. We'll see what he adds to it. I mean, the changeup, the stuff I heard was just ridiculous fastball and ridiculous slider, you know? So basically like overgrown Spencer Strider, but like, you know, and like Gerrit Cole was like that early in his career too. But, you know, if he can add, if that changeup, it looks as good as it did, you know, obviously it's spring training and, you know, I'm sure he's worked on things and, but like, oh my God, you know, it's, even if it's just the two pitches and then an occasional third or fourth, the dude definitely looks ready to go. And I think even if I agree with the decision to send him down for now, just get him more innings, but like, I think it could be very quick. You know what I mean? I don't necessarily think it's going to take long, and I don't think it's necessarily going to be a contract play. I think it might be like, let's just make sure he's comfortable. Let's get his innings up and then let's let it rip.
I truly think he'll be up by May.
I think May would be a good target.
Especially if they're competing. If they're competing, which, I mean, the Central's a mess. They probably could be. I think he'll be up. So I think he could be the difference team, or the difference that the team needs in the rotation.
And
especially, you know, with Jared Jones possibly coming up this year, too.
Yeah, Jared Jones looked also really good this spring. And Bubba Chandler, you know, is still kind of in work in progress, but electric arm. So they got a lot of pitchers ready to kind of go when they need them. Yeah. And we talked about Henry Davis previously, had a great, great, great spring with the bat. So they have enough that you're like, you could squint and like, if they have a good enough April, which they've had, remember like April, it was either last year.
I do remember. Ago, yeah.
Like, the Pirates look really good.
We were thinking, they might be a playoff team, you know?
Yeah. And then they just sucked.
They fell off. Yeah.
Beyond imagine. But like, if you can do that and then add Paul Skeens and then add Jared Jones and all these guys, like, you know, that's a recipe for success.
Yeah.
The other note I had from the spring breakout game was they were using like AAA rules, which means they had the challenge system for the balls and strikes.
Yeah.
So anyone that hasn't seen it, it's like a hawk. So I think they use Hawkeye, which is basically like what they use for tennis, you know, whatever system they use. But basically they can go to the monitor, you know, and check. I don't know if they go to, you know, their headquarters for refs or like they would for the regular challenges, or if they just like let the computer spit it out. But
so I believe
check on it. Yeah,
I believe they go to another umpire to look at the screen, because I've seen the ABS system in work at Iron Pigs games. Like Friday, still use it. And I remember there was a pitch thrown by Michael Plassmeyer of the Iron Pigs, and it was a strike three, and it was called strike three, and the player challenged it, and so they show on the video screen the batter's box and where the pitch lands. Well, the pitch landed right in the zone, and they called it a ball. They overturned it to ball four. So there's still some kinks to work out with the system, but overall, I like it.
Yeah, the first one was really interesting. It was, I had it written down here. It was in that Orioles-Pirates game, and it was Cade Povich throwing, and it was one of the Orioles farm, you know, catchers. He threw a pitch, I believe it was like a slider. You know, it was something right in the corner of the zone, and it missed for a ball. And they reviewed it, and it was like, it was kind of an interesting one to review, because it was like, it was very close. And they took a few seconds longer than I thought it should. It was kind of them waiting around for a second. It was like bordering on like, should he get a warm-up pitch in, which is probably too long.
Yeah.
But once they showed it, it like grazed the corner of that zone by like an inch. Like it was like hilarious how like close it was, but it did graze the zone and it was a strike. So they overturned it. So it was like the closest possible call that could have possibly been tested on to start it, and it worked. And then the second one that I saw, if there was more, I don't know, but the other one that I saw was Jordan Lawler, the top prospect for the Diamondbacks. He challenged one that was going to be, I think, strike three. It was like 0-2 or 1-2, something like that. He gets the call overturned and then hits a two-run double that kind of, you know, puts them in that game. So two successful challenges too that was notable. I think that's the future. I think it's inevitable. I think it's just a matter of when and how they want to do it. I think the whole thing about, you know, we can't replace umpires, right? It's never going to happen. No. But I think this is like a happy medium that's like, hey, if we can get this to a point where it's not slowing the game down, but also we can be like, hey, we know we got to review this. Like, we have to look at this, you know, and if batters and managers are trained well to be like, let's review the ones that really matter and not just like screw around, I think it could be huge. It could account. It's those small couple of errors that we hate out of umpires. And if this can change those small couple of errors that we see every game,
I think it'll be huge
when it gets huge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else? Yeah. Anything else from spring training? I know Harper is dealing with kind of a back kind of.
Yeah. There's concern about back soreness with Bryce because he hasn't played three games in a row. It is kind of concerning because I mentioned earlier that early on in Bryce's career, there's a lot of talk about, hey, he's going to have back issues later in his career, so how violent his swing is. And they cited Tiger Woods as an example. Kind of concerned about that this is now starting to pop up. It just feels like he's not a broken player, but like he gets the flukiest luck when it comes to injuries. And I'm hoping that this is now not the start of something chronic.
Yeah. Back injuries can be tough. And I think Trout, you know, when he started dealing with back stuff, it was concerned. It's not only been back stuff for him, but it's just one of those things you don't necessarily get over. It's more of managing and, you know, so, but it can lead to issues. So hopefully it's just kind of a thing he can work through and, you know, so we'll see how that works out for him. The other thing that Nine wanted us to mention was a really up and down spring training for Yamamoto.
Yoshinobu Yamamoto.
He had like a couple. The first game was the Gavin Lux game where Gavin Lux was so bad that he was yanked out of his starting spot, you know, for Mookie Betts at shortstop. Yep. And then the second game was kind of the same way the most recent game that is, where it was just a lot of random hits and stuff like that. I think he finished like an 8-something ERA. And he's going to be pitching on Thursday in like a real game. So I don't know what to say about that. I don't know. I was impressed in the little time he did where it was these first innings where it felt like he was just dominant. But then there were the other times where I was just like, you know, it was hittable. So maybe there's an adjustment period here. Maybe, you know, the Dodgers fans will be sweating a little bit. I don't really know what to say about it yet. It's just too small of a sample. But I know I will be watching, come 6 a.m. or whatever on Thursday. I'll watch before work or if I have to. But I'll be very curious what he looks like against the Padres, as the Padres have, you know, still a really talented lineup. So, I just wanted to get that in. Since, you know, the next time we see him will be as the regular season starts for game two. I think Tyler Glasnow is starting game one.
Yes, he's the opening day starter.
Yeah. So let's jump into our previews. Let's do the AL East first. Since we kind of started on the Yankees, we can, we kind of hit on the Yankees a little bit. We can kind of just follow up on them, I think, would be a good way to go. The Yankees, obviously, they made the big swing for Juan Soto. That was kind of their big offseason move, which it would be for anyone, obviously. We mentioned they still might have another move to make because of this Garrett Cole situation. It wouldn't shock us if they're talking to Boris about one of these pitchers or what the deal is, but I think they have a good overall roster right now. Soto definitely helps quite a bit on that front. And then they've added that, like, Verdugo and Grisham are both guys who are like floor raisers, right? And when they were going from like Jake Bowers to these guys, you know, being able to play the outfield, it's like if you can just be like a good center fielder or like an average left fielder, you know, good hitter or whatever, like Verdugo usually is, it probably means an upgrade for them. So I think they made some key kind of adjustments there. But do you think, you know, this is a team that had a really disappointing 2023. Do you think they did enough to like really account for one, the struggles they went through last year, and now if Cole's going to miss a couple months?
They're going to have trouble, mainly because like these guys can't stay healthy. You know, we don't know what Anthony Rizzo is going to look like, coming off the concussion stuff. Giancarlo Stanton's never healthy. Yeah. Aaron Judge struggles to stay healthy. The depth is just not there. So like, yeah, getting Juan Soto is huge. If you can guarantee me that no one on this team gets injured, oh, easy NL East winners or AL East winners, sorry. Yeah. But I don't know what's in the water with the training staff, but they can't keep anyone healthy on this team. And there's no depth ready yet. Like, they don't have guys in the minors they can just call up and be like, okay, here, take over. Like, you know, Oswaldo Cabrera fell off tremendously, so he's not really a reliable depth piece. Oswald Peraza is another guy that, like, you know, a lot of hype around him as a prospect, but never really delivered. So, you know, I don't know how he'd look if he had to step into a starting role. So, and like pitching wise, like Garrett Cole's down. Now you have Nestor Cortez constantly injured. Carlos Rodon constantly injured. Marcus Stroman constantly injured. There is a high probability that Cole, Cortez, Stroman, and Rodon could all be down at the same time. You could be without these guys at the same time. And then you're stuck with Clark Schmidt and God knows who from AAA on this team in the rotation.
So I do think they have some guys in AAA that could be valuable. I mean, Drew Thorpe was one of these guys that, you know, they obviously moved on from him, but they have a few guys that are kind of in that AA, AAA mix that could be, like, I think Will Warren might be the answer to our question of, like, who the hell would they start fifth, you know? I think he could be just the guy that fills in. They have the thing that defines Yankees prospects to me when I like look at their like pitchers is like all of them throw like 150 innings somehow. Like they're all throwing twice as much as everyone else, which I think is like good. Like I mean, there is probably a angle of like, well, they might just be pitching them too much, but like I think all of their guys prove that they can handle 20 plus legitimate starts in a season, you know, and that's pretty a good thing to have. So Will Warren was the one that jumped out to my head. I'm sure there are others, but, you know, I think they do have enough depth maybe in certain parts of the roster. They did, like I said, I think they've future-proofed themselves a little bit. I was going to mention, like, as we started with, like, our guys for the season, as far as guys we're interested in or, you know, maybe are X-factors for this team beyond the obvious. But I was going to have Trent Grisham because if one... You know, he came over as like the fourth outfielder, but like, you know, fourth outfielder on the Yankees could mean you're playing 150 games, right? Like because of Aaron Judge and, you know, or how they kind of are going to have to use their DH spot. And he could get some serious time and he has a swing that could be like really grooved for Yankee Stadium in playing good center field defense. So it's kind of like one of those things where, you know, he might get more run and he could really swing things positively if he is able to hit well and play good defense and be that fourth guy that they haven't had and it feels like so long, or even third guy really, depending, you know, when you look at how their team has gone recently. So that's the kind of guy that I had highlighted for that, and I'm very curious to see how immediate his playing time is and how they kind of end up shuffling out the outfield, especially if Aaron is entering the season, maybe playing, but not totally healthy.
Yeah.
Did you my have X, a, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. My X factor guy is Anthony Volpe. Yeah. I think this is going to be a big breakout year for him. Mm-hmm. He was impressive last year, especially with the glove.
Yeah.
And I think the bat's going to take the step forward this year.
it's really nice when you have the floor of like, he's clearly a great defensive player and he's a great base runner. Like, I think he's like a really super talented base runner.
Yeah.
Both in speed and like knowing how to do it. He was just struggled so much at the bat at points where it's like, you know,
he did, but I think having that full year under his belt and the Yankees not giving up on him is going to make big differences this year in that, you know, he's adjusted to the majors now.
Yeah.
I'm a year older now. I've seen what major league pitching can do. Now it's time to take that step forward and go beyond, you know, what he's done. And I think he's going to do that. And I think, you know, pitchers are going to be worried about Juan Soto and Aaron Judge. Mm-hmm. That's going to allow for a sneaky season from Volpe and from Gleyber Torres as well. I think Gleyber Torres has a pretty big year for them too.
Yeah, I think all these guys, if they get one or two of them to perform better than they did previously, then it's huge, you know.
Yeah.
If Volpe raises his average from 203 or whatever it was, what is this? Yeah, I think somewhere around there to 240, 250.
Yeah.
You know, then he jumps to a league average hitter, you know, because he's already hitting for a little bit of power, you know, so he's got like an average walk rate, I think. So if he can get up to a league average hitter, then he's like a three plus win player, right? At minimum. And then if he does better than that, which I think he's can, it's not like saying it's going to happen, but
well, definitely
certainly seems capable of having like a nice breakout season. I mean, BREF had him as a three win player already, and that's with an 80, you know, OPS plus on their register here. So, you know, if he can hit league average, then they would have him as like an all-star, you know. Yeah. So I think a little bit will go a long way for Volpe, and he will be a big reason if they are able to like really kind of click the way they weren't able to last year. The next team I wanted to jump to was the Rays. The Rays kind of did what you expect in an offseason for them. They really didn't go out and do too much. Yeah, I mean, they ended up trading a guy. They traded Glasnow to the Dodgers. They got back Ryan Pepiot and Johnny DeLuca, who I think is actually hurt now. And then, you know, the Wander Franco situation is still happening, so they're kind of figuring out who's going to be playing where. I'm sure the spring was spent kind of handling some of that stuff. Junior Caminero is not going to start on the opening day.
I think that's dumb.
Yeah, I was curious because I know he has played shortstop, and it's like possible for him to have just like, hey, let's throw him in a shortstop and see if he can handle it. I know they have their rhymes and reasons to doing the stuff, right? So
yeah,
not going to begrudge him too hard on it. But yeah, we'll have to wait to see his bat in the majors again for a little while, maybe not super long. You know, I can't imagine it'll be that long, but they kind of stood pat in a lot of ways, and now they have kind of a lot of cooks in the kitchen, which they always do, but there's kind of too many guys for a certain amount of spots, you know, still. You got a guy like, who's the guy, Curtis Mead, yes. He's done really well, you know, in his small stint last year, seems to be ready to roll as far as like, you know, at least trying out for a major league spot. But like, you look at every single place he could possibly play, and it's like filled with someone, either a veteran or someone else. So it's kind of a tricky, you know, it's really tricky, you know, and they got a lot of guys for, you know, 9-10 spots. And they're going to have to figure out the next week how that's going to shake out. Who they want to prioritize, you know, is Harold Ramirez still around, guys like that, you know, in a few weeks. So what is your perspective on their roster as it's kind of shaped over the last few months?
Looking over it here, so Taj Bradley's going to be injured to start the season. That's a kind of a blow to rotation. Is Boz... Have we heard anything about Boz's health?
I think Boz is healthy. I don't know if he's like healthy to the point where he's going to pitch right now, but he's like coming back and working back. Like, he's throwing bullpens and stuff. So I think he'll likely start on the IL, looks like, you know, delayed start.
So like looking at spring
training, something like that.
Yeah. Looking at the rotation to like start the year, look here at the depth chart. It would be Eflin, Savale, Little, Pepiot, and then bullpen. Now, I really like Pepiot, and I think going to Tampa is going to be great for him because they're so good at developing starters. I think he's going to have a very, very good season this year.
It was an important guy for them to get from in that Glasnow trade, where it's a guy that the Dodgers probably would have loved to have kept, but had to give up someone to grab someone like Glasnow. But I don't know what his upside is, but I think he's a really talented pitcher. And
I think his upside is a two. I think he could make a very good two.
Yeah.
Especially now in Tampa. So if I'm thinking of X factor players on this team, for the pitching end, he's my pick for pitchers.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at hitters and. Man, I think Josh Lowe's going to have a big, big year.
Yeah.
This is a guy that I think he's going to take that next step forward, and I could easily see a 3,300 season from him.
Yeah. I mean, he was really impressive last year. Yeah, exactly. And that was after really not being relevant the year before that. You know what I mean? So it was really big for him to have that kind of year, and then now... Okay, how do you build on that? Because I think there's still a lot of, the Rays constant thing is platooning and fitting this guy here and this guy here and this guy here. So how is that going to work out, for him? He may have struggled a little bit more against lefties, but overall, he's a really talented player. And do you just let him kind of ride, and... Is what's the upside there? Could he be just like a firmly, like a 1-2 hitter in your lineup, playing center field and right field or whatever they want to have him playing? I think it's definitely possible. You know what I mean? It's just tricky as far as do we let him take that full 600 at bats? Whatever it might be.
I think they should. I think it's time. So I think that he's going to impress when they give him that chance.
Yeah.
Also, incredibly funny here. They only have one catcher on the roster currently.
And it's Rene Pinto. Yeah. Apparently, they have Francisco Mejia back. He's competing for a spot based on a minor league deal. And who else did they have? They had someone else, and I'm like, really? Him? It was Alex Jackson. Alex Jackson, I think, is projected to maybe be their backup catcher right now.
The Braves prospect?
Yeah, the guy, and they shipped him out to the Marlins, and we haven't heard from him since. He played for the Marlins and Brewers for 10 games.
I haven't heard about him in there forever.
So I'm pretty sure he's in the ring with them, and was I heard a writer on Effectively Wild or someone say he's possibly going to be the number two to start the season. So I don't know what that means. Actually got some. Nothing left to show. There's nothing he's really done ever since.
You're not kidding. He is here on the, on the Rays. Wow.
So I don't know. I don't know what the plan is there. I have a really weird guy, and this is kind of dating back to some other conversations we've had in the past with a friend, Ryan, and some others. But I still don't know who's going to make the opening day roster. So I'm kind of just projecting this as a possibility, but Richie Palacios looks like it's going to be their fourth.
I knew you were going to say him. Yeah.
And he hit a bomb or something a few days ago. It reminded me he's on the team. And he was someone that was weird because he was had a short stint with Cardinals last year, and it was really good. And it was a tiny sample. Right. But he's been good in AAA, and he was a former Guardians prospect who Guardians, couldn't develop a hitter. Goes over to St. Louis last year and hits pretty well, particularly in the majors. He's got good on-base skills, it seems like. And he's not a big dude, but he's got some power, he's 26 years old. It just kind of all lines up to be another Rays. Why is this guy hitting... 300 with an 850 OPS as a platoon guy, it just all feels it's too teed up for the Rays to have found just some other guy to screw over the Cardinals.
Right.
And I think we would accept that as a fun possibility, but and his brother, I think still plays for the Pirates or whatever. He's just one of those guys. He could be nothing this season, but again, if we wake up in June, it's like Richie Palacios is third on the Rays in WAR because he's just mashing against righties. It's like, well, we should have known. So that's why I went with him. Let's go on to the champions from last year, the Baltimore Orioles. Their biggest thing this offseason was obviously the sale of their team. That's still like kind of in the works, I think, but like, you know, it's basically like, you know, just a matter of, it's a foregone conclusion. I don't think there's any ambiguity over like, well, is this still happening? No, it's like the dude's like actively hanging out with the team all the time and doing the stuff. So, just a matter of, it's a formality at this point. And that coincided with them acquiring Corbin Burns, which we still don't know if that was like happened because of, or if it's just a coincidence or what. But the Orioles, you know, they didn't do a ton, but they did, you know, bring in Burns, which was like, thank God they actually did something, especially with the injury to Kyle Bradish. And then they also added Craig Kimbrell, which was like the one thing they did before that. Yeah.
I saw him have a meltdown in spring and I laughed.
I still believe. But I mean, the biggest thing with them, adding Burns is great, but it seems like they are on the verge of adding the number one prospect in baseball. Jackson Holliday could be starting day one. He's certainly hit well enough. I think it might be like, do you want to get him some more defensive chops at second base? Because he's really only been playing shortstop. It's a scary team. And I don't think there's going to be many people picking against them. There's obviously the downside in the rotation and like just relying on a bunch of young guys in general. It's hard to say a team that wins 100 and some odd games last year, every single player on their team is young, and then they add Corbin Burns, is going to get worse, right?
Right.
So the question, I guess, here is, I mean, what is Jackson Holliday to this team starting next week? Do you think he's their starting second baseman? Do you think they wait a little bit? And what do you see his impact being for the season?
I feel like you have to give him the starting second base job. You know, if I bring up the Orioles here, bring up all the rosters, but like he's been so impressive this spring that it feels like you got to give it to him.
The other part of it is that they do have options for guys, right? Like they do have Jordan Westberg, who was good last year, you know, and they have Mateo. They have guys who can be solid. So it's not like they're like starting Adam Frazier again and being like, sorry, Jackson, you know. But it definitely feels like there's enough going on.
And Mateo's had a pretty good spring. The guy that's having a really good spring that I'm so happy is, and that is going to be my X factor for the O's, is Colton Cowser. He is smoking the ball this spring. So I'm hoping that means he's going to get a starting spot in the outfield.
I don't know what their arrangement's going to be, because they're going to have Hayes and Mullins probably locked in as starters, and then Santander playing some DH, and then, you know, Kerstad's in the mix, Cowser's in the mix. Yeah. So you could have Cowser playing right field, like, theoretically. Right, he was in direct competition with who was it? Kyle Stowers and
Kyle Stowers, who hit three home runs in one game.
Yeah.
And like Stowers has seven home runs this spring.
He has seven home runs. I had no idea.
Yeah, he had three in one game.
That is nutty. So they have clearly a lot of options there. It's kind of like we just described the Rays, where they have a lot of cooks in one kitchen, right? So I still think they maybe have a move to make, but they also, all these guys have options, right? So it's like, they can just kind of start the hot hand to start the season, whether that's Jackson Holliday and Kyle Stowers, or, you know, freaking, you know, Jordan Westberg and Colton Cowser. You know, they have so many options. Ramon Arias is still around. So they got a lot of things to do. Although I do think I have to imagine one of these guys like Urias or they have Colton Wong around. Someone is not making this roster. One of these veterans is not getting to the start of the season. I think that's very likely Jorge Mateo, but he does bring a lot more defensive versatility that you can just stash him on the bench and let him pitch run. So it'll just be a matter of who, I think, as opposed to.
And then, you know, looking at this pitching rotation,
Julio Teheran's here.
I know. Julio Teheran is who I was looking at. Like, dude, he could be the fifth starter theoretically.
Let's go. I'm all in.
It's possible. Especially with the injuries that they've suffered already.
Yeah. Cole Irvin's also added a lot of velocity, apparently.
Yes, he has. He was
in driveline type program. So
yeah.
You know, love John Means. I don't know. Yeah. I think he's gonna be out a little bit to start the season, maybe, or a slow start, but they got some guys. You know, I think they could still use some work pitching wise, and maybe they grab another guy, but it's hard to knock this roster too much, at least compared to last year. I don't love their bullpen, or at least like it's kind of just relying on them being god tier bullpen engineers again.
Right.
Which I don't know can happen. At a certain point, you can't just assume that like Jacob Webb and Dylan Tate and, you know, Danny Coulomb are like going to be elite relievers just because they are on the Orioles. They could. Yeah. Maybe.
Theoretically, sure.
But
like you're also relying on Craig Kimbrel to be your closer here, and like granted he was an all-star last year, but
yeah,
he's so prone to blowups, especially when you overuse him. And you know, if that first knuckle curve is a ball, buddy, you're in trouble.
Yep, that's everybody's that's their what do we call it, the
Craig theory.
Yep. Watch Craig the first theory pitch. Is true. Looks good. He's good.
If the first curve is a strike, you're having a good outing. If that first curve is a ball in the dirt, you're in for a rough outing.
Shout out to Annika for
absolutely
continued genius with Craig Theory.
Open us up with that.
My player to just note here was Kobe Mayo. Basically the same thing that you're offering with Colton Cowser. He hasn't made the majors yet, but like I saw the Orioles play the Braves a couple of times last year. And He's just a beast, man. And like it definitely feels like a Austin Riley type prospect for them, you know, where you know, I don't know if he's going to be third base, but he's just a big dude, really great bat. And, you know, they don't it's not like they have a hole anywhere for him to go, right? But like he might just hit too well for them to leave off. He had a 998 OPS this spring, and it wasn't home runs. You know, he hit one home run, but it was lots of doubles, lots of just like consistent hits. Obviously, when you have a 436 OPS or OBP, lots of walks, you know.
Yeah.
So I think he could threaten for a very quick call up. I don't think there's room, you know, like I just don't think there's a way for him to
make it. There's no room. There's so many, and that's insane to think with a prospect like that. But like, they have so much depth that there's no room until someone gets hurt.
But I would definitely, you know, if I was Ryan Mountcastle, I'd be sweating a little bit. We will move on to the Red Sox next. What is there to say about the Red Sox? They trade Chris Sale for Vaughn Grissom. Vaughn Grissom's not going to miss the beginning of the season.
Yep.
Wait,
he's missing the season?
No, beginning of the season. So he's not starting the season.
Okay. I was like,
that would be way worse. And what's the big thing that just happened to them recently that I'm blanking on?
Oh man, I don't know.
Lucas Giolito. Duh.
Oh, right. They signed him and now he's out.
Elbow surgery after signing him. You know, so as soon as they try to like, okay, we're going to retool some things, we'll move on from Sale, we'll grab Giolito, and we'll kind of work ourselves a little younger. They immediately, you know, get this awful, awful injury news. And, you know, like, I think they have more of a plan in place than they did with Kyne Bloom. Like, I as much as Bloom maybe got the, you know, crappy end of the stick, I think there were definitely some decisions made during his tenure there that were extremely questionable. But I think they might be moving in the right direction, I think this is kind of an awkward middle year for them where it's like,
yeah,
they're going to be testing out a lot of guys and they have some established guys and a lot of veterans. And it's like, where does this all kind of shake out? And I don't really know how to answer that question. I mean, do you have any feel for, you know, are they better than last year? Like firmly?
No.
You know, no, I would probably agree with you. So
I don't think so. That whole team's a mess. Like it's just Rafi Devers, Tristan Crosses, and then like they feel I wish I could describe what team from the past they feel like. I want to say they kind of feel like the old Nationals teams.
Mm-hmm.
Where you had your star third baseman in Ryan Zimmerman. Mm-hmm. And not a lot else. And
yeah, some stars and stripes elements here.
Trying
yeah.
to put it together, and you know, the best way to do that is to just tank. But mm-hmm. here's the problem with the new rules. Boston won't be able to effectively do that because they're a big market team.
Yeah. And nor, I mean, and should they? No, I just, they're stuck in the middle now where, like, we don't really feel like getting into the big fish.
They're likely not going to be legit contenders until some of these guys yeah. start leaving the Orioles and Rays. So right. it's going to be five years until I think they're legit contenders again.
The swoon for the Yankees and Red Sox have both obviously coincided with the Blue Jays being competent, the Rays yeah. being consistently good, and the Orioles blowing up. So
I mean, it's just kind of an unfortunate
time for Boston.
It's wild the time we're in where the Yankees and Red Sox are not the most talked about rivalry in baseball. They're not relevant. Like, yeah sure, Yankees made the move for Juan Soto, but I don't think they're a playoff team.
Yeah,
Red Sox are not a playoff team. Like, I can't remember in my lifetime. I don't think there's been a time in my lifetime where both the Yankees and Red Sox were not playoff teams. And that has happened last year, and it could possibly happen again this year. And I can't remember a time where it's happened before that.
I think I mentioned last year that it was the most shockingly dull, like, rivalry series I've ever heard.
Yeah,
between them, because it was like on ESPN, right? But it was like August or September, and both of them were basically
out of the playoffs. And it's like, and, well, here's Yankees, Red Sox, and I'm so hoping lame. the national games step back from that rivalry and see, hey, yeah, these teams aren't that good now.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't hate them putting, you know, I don't hate them being like, oh yeah, it's defaulting them on TV, but like it's like they just
I don't want to watch good, two you know? Bottom tier teams compete.
Yeah.
On national TV. When they're at their
peak, it's great, but it's just not there.
100%. You know? Right. Like, early 2000s, Yankees-Red Sox was fantastic baseball and entertainment in general. And I'd even say, even in the 2010s, it was entertaining. You know, when A-Rod came back from suspension and you had, was it Lackey that hit him? Someone hit him. Mm-hmm. Someone hit A-Rod. And, like, that was great TV. Now it's like, you know, I don't care really to watch these teams struggle with against each other. Like, sure, the games are fun to watch, but it's like they're mid teams, and I'd rather watch more Dodgers Braves, Dodgers Phillies, stuff like that late night than this.
Yeah. I do think the one advantage they'll have, or the thing that they'll be like looking at hard, you know, it's like if there's hope to be had here as far as the next couple of years, they have some guys to part off, and they have some really good prospects at the top of their system.
Yes.
And the one that I wanted to highlight was Roman Anthony.
Yes.
Who is one of their – they have, like, two or three outfield guys. Sedan yeah. Rafaela should start, I think, the season either in AAA or the majors. Willy Abreu, I think, might start the season in the majors. And then you got Roman Anthony, who cracked AA last year. He's still 19. He turns 20 in, like, a month or two.
Yeah.
And I don't think it does not feel out of the realm possibility that he matches in double A to start the year. And he's up at age 20, you know, yeah. I don't think that's impossible.
We're definitely really seeing prospects come up younger and younger now.
It's really about them proving they can hit certain caliber of pitching. And if they can, if he just shows that, then I think you just let it rip.
Yeah.
And he's just
loose.
Yeah, he's crushed, and they have Tyler O'Neill, which I like the Tyler O'Neill pickup for them, because it's like
I thought the Tyler O'Neill trade was good,
but he's only there for a year, right? So it's like if he gets hurt or if he's out or not effective or whatever it is, like, you know, it could be someone like let's just let Roman try this in left field, right field, center field, wherever they want to put him, and I think we could end up seeing him this year. Based on everything I've heard and seen from him. So I will be very curious to see kind of how that outfield shakes out.
Yeah. The guy I'm watching this year is Casas. See how he, you know, how he takes off after a really solid year last year.
Yeah, he really figured it out.
He did. And I feel like he's a guy that has 30, 35 homer potential, especially in Fenway. And I feel like he's like, if anything is going to work well for the Red Sox, it's these young guys coming up and actually making an impact with Devers. And I think more importantly than anyone, it's Casas right now who's got to make that big impact.
Yeah, because he was really the guy last year that came in and really succeeded.
Like, he's the guy that, like, I think is their cleanup hitter of the future.
Yeah.
And I'm really interested to see how he does. Like, I believe in him. I've been taking him in all my fantasy drafts as my first baseman. Mm-hmm. So I think he's going to have a good year. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's, other than Devers, Boston's other all-star representative this year.
I think that's a good call. Yeah, I think that's, and he's got power, and he's figured out. I think he struggled with the contact for you know, this last year or so as he's been in the majors, but I think he's really solved that part of it. It doesn't mean he needs to be a high 200s guy, but he's such a good on base guy. You know, as long as you're that good at drawing walks, you know, and you can hit 250 plus, just have the Mac Olson career path and then look at what he did. You know what I mean?
And like, he hasn't hit well in spring right now, but he's been drawing walks.
Yeah. It's just there. It's always there
and
for him.
This is the thing with spring. People will look at spring training and they'll be concerned, like, hey, this guy's hitting 161. A lot of guys go into spring, especially pitchers, and it's not about them, you know, putting up good stats. It's like, hey, I've got stuff I want to work on. This is a perfect environment for me to work on it. Here's where I can work on it. For Casas, it's working on his discipline. And this looks good. 6 walks to 10 strikeouts.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I like to see that.
Yeah. It really, the stats mean more for the guys that really haven't been around than the guys that have. Right. And, you know, like, it just matters more, you know.
Another guy we should consider, Bobby Dalbec, has had a really good spring.
I'm not going to do the Bobby Dalbec thing. I'll leave you to Bobby Dalbec.
I will say, hey, maybe Bobby Dalbec can be a guy this year. Maybe he could be a decent DH.
Our friend Ben would love it more than anything in the world. Just I think the strikeout stuff is too crazy. But I mean, the dude hits the ball really hard.
He hits it hard.
We'll see. I think he might be DFA fodder if he doesn't. You know, I just don't know what role he's going to have on the roster either. So
that's fair.
We'll see. Our last team in the AL East, just wrapping them up, is the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays' biggest offseason thing was their pursuit of Shohei Ohtani. That didn't work out. But, you know, I think even with their failure there, I think they made some kind of smaller reinforcements here and there. They brought back Kevin Kiermaier, who I just love Kevin Kiermaier, everything he does. They signed Justin Turner to kind of be like a third baseman, first baseman, DH. You know, I think DH is probably where he's going to be most of the time there because that's where he's listed on the roster. Some other kind of, you know, smaller pitchers, Yariel Rodriguez here and there. And then last week they signed Joey Votto, which I don't know. Maybe that was a news note that we missed.
His first home run today, his first at bat.
And on his first pitch, I think, too.
First pitch against Zach Wheeler, hit a home run.
So Joey will be competing for kind of like a first base DH spot as well. So
Justin Turner.
They added some veteran depth. They obviously probably wish they could have done a little bit more as far as just like upside and whatever, but it definitely feels like a roster that could be, you know, in contention, you know, for a wild card spot. And maybe, you know, I don't know how much separation they have with the Red Sox and Yankees. I guess the problem right now is Kevin Gausman's dealing with an injury.
Yes.
And it's kind of like, it's not necessarily like a bad injury, but if he misses opening day, that kind of complicates like, hey, that's the biggest strength of their pitching is like having that guy who's just been so consistently good.
Right.
How do you kind of view what they did post Ohtani sweepstakes? And do you think it's enough for them to kind of stay in the mix?
Justin Turner's a good signing to have as a guy at DH. But like, other than that, you know, I'm not as impressed with the Blue Jays this year coming into the season as I was last year. Last year, they felt like a division winner to me. Mm-hmm. This year, with everything Baltimore's done to improve, with how the Rays are the Rays, they feel like a third place team to me. Now, yeah, even a third place team, they still could make the playoffs. But a lot of other teams in the AL also improved. So, like, I think their ceiling is the seventh or sixth wild card. I don't think they're going to be the fifth. But, like, I don't know. They don't scream anything special to me. And they don't really have anyone in the minors aside from Teeterman that really is like, when this guy comes up, he's going to make an impact. You know, like, yeah, Alan Rodin has looked solid in spring training. But he's not really like, he's a prospect not a lot of people know about.
Yeah, like, and a lower tier like guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he can hit, but he can't field for anything.
Yeah.
But like, I guess like my guy would be Davis Schneider. Like, he had a really solid year last year. Yeah.
So weird.
A solid year last year, and like,
He's like the three true outcome. Like, he just hit piss missiles basically as soon as he got up, but then he slumped really hard.
Yeah,
you know, just in the season, they basically just didn't let him play in the playoffs at all.
Right,
and now they kind of got this mess of like, Ernie Clement had a good spring, and
Isaiah
Kiner from Leffa got signed, and Santiago Espinal and Kevin Vigio are still there. So it's like, is there a spot for Davis Schneider? And should there be, you know, maybe they should. I think maybe they should have given him maybe more of a shot to, you know, start in the majors. I don't know what their plan is with him yet. And it seems like he was okay this spring. I don't think it's particularly notable, you know, as far as good or great. But I mean, he was really good. He hit 1,000 OBS, and I know it's a 35 game sample, but he also hit really well in the minors. So I think. Yeah. He's flawed, but I think he could have like a really big role if he's offered it. You know what I mean? Right. He's a very unique player. It's kind of the barrels over everything approach that a lot of people like, even with a not super impressive like physical. You know, he's like 5'9". You know,
yeah.
But weird player, and I hope it translates, because it's kind of fun and strange the way he does his thing.
Yeah, and then like, if anyone else on that team. I think Vlad is going to have a big year, especially with it being a contract year.
I think it kind of has to be.
Yeah, you know, Vlad hitting 290 with 35 bombs wouldn't shock me.
Yeah. And, you know, if he can get himself in a situation where he's playing at least capable enough first base defense, you know, like I said, coming up on his next year.
I think he'll be a trade candidate, honestly, if the Blue Jays are out of it.
Yeah, I mean, because he would only have a year left after this to kind of figure, and he's already expensive. You know, he's already making, you know, quite a bit of money because of arbitration. So if the Blue Jays see, like, hey, we only have a year plus left of Vlad, and it's July, he's like kind of just doing what he did last year, where he's okay, then that's a big deal. The guy I had circled, which is like, it's kind of a, first of all, let's just get it out of the way. Alek Manoah is going to be the most interesting guy watching this team. Like, I have no idea what he is. I have zero idea, but he is the guy I'm most interested to watch, period. The other guy is, believe it or not, after so many years, is Nate Pearson, who I think should just get a job in the bullpen, right? Like, I mean, I think I don't really see a reason for him to not be involved in their bullpen. They have a good bullpen. I think it's one of the strengths of their team.
I think he'd make a very good reliever.
Really hard.
Yeah.
And he has great, seems like great secondary stuff, you know, and I don't think he should be given like a, you know, starting job or anything. I just don't think it's worth it as far as the injuries he's had to like give him more than a couple innings at a time or an inning at a time. But apparently he's throwing any splitter that people are kind of freaking out about, and he still throws 100 plus, you know? So, it's been a while for him. Obviously it's been a kind of a roller coaster, but I do think there's maybe a light at the end of the tunnel for him as, you know, kind of a shutdown leaf type. So, I'll be very curious to see where he starts the year, in his age 27 season. Looks like he had like a high ERA, but again, we're kind of looking at individual pitches and confidence and things like that. Not so much he let up a home run here or there. So,
right.
See. So, like last time we mentioned, what teams do you think will be in the mix for the playoffs, which is a lot harder for this division than it was for the Central's? And yeah. Which team are you most confident or would be your pick to win the division?
So I think in the mix, it's going to be obviously the Orioles, the Rays, and the Yankees early on. I think injuries are going to hit the Yankees midseason, and July, I think they're going to be out of it. And I think they will end up trading Soto once they're out of it.
That would be so crazy.
And then I think the O's are going to I think the O's easily win the division.
Yeah.
I think they're such a step ahead of Tampa. And I keep waiting for that Devil Ray magic to run out. You know?
Yeah. I think I'm kind of in the same boat as you as far as the Rays in particular. Like, I just don't. I know the Wander Franco thing is complicated, but if we're talking about pure baseball and we're removing him from the equation and they're not all in on Caminero being kind of the replacement for him yet, it's a mess of a lot of guys. And I know they do well in these contexts, but it's when you don't have at least one rock to kind of lean on, and they don't have Shane McClanahan this year, at least, you know, I'm pretty sure he's going to be out for the entire year. Like, it's just, there's just too much, like, there's lots of decent guys, but there's no entrenched, all right, you don't have to worry about this guy. There's almost none of that on the entire roster, minus, like, Randy. You know, he's, like, one of the only guys. Maybe Yandy Diaz, you know, but, like, Yandy Diaz had his first, like, really great season in his career and was still kind of the same guy, and he's older and he can barely run, you know? So it's like, and, you know, Josh Lowe is good, but if he's just a platoon guy, then that's still limited, so I think there's enough pitfalls here that I'm not in love with them. I do agree that Orioles is the best team. I don't know if I'm like, I don't know if they're a 100-win team again, you know, just because that was so ridiculous what they did last year. But I think they could get the 90s, you know, without too much, you know.
95, 97 wins feels very, very likeful.
If I had to put my eggs in any other team's baskets, I think I mean, the Rays will probably be relevant. I'm not saying they're going to be bad. I just wouldn't. Yeah. I'm just not confident in them as a playoff team. But I might have the Blue Jays in that second spot because I think they have some flexibility with their roster. And the Yankees, and I think the Blue Jays, Yankees, and Rays are kind of all in the same clump. And they're all going to be maybe fighting for the same spot. But I would say probably two teams make it. You know, one team finishes a game or two above. I would just gut say the Blue Jays have a better shot, but it's not really, it's just kind of a gut feel, and obviously the Rays are way more consistent than all these other teams, so they could easily prove me wrong here. But it's a good division. It's just kind of a strange situation now that we're looking at the Orioles as being like, well, we should just hand it to the Orioles, who also have the number one prospect in baseball coming up, and it's just like, that's just a strange place to be.
It's insane.
After what we dealt with so long. Pat, let's go to our bread and butter. The reason why we're here, the National League East.
Yeah.
And let's start with the Miami Marlins. No, I won't do that to you. We'll start with the Phillies. We'll throw you a bone.
Yeah, why not?
St. Patrick's Day. Yeah. So the Phillies, you know, we're in on seemingly a few free agents to kind of patch up some pitching and some other things. They were kind of tied to a few guys, but they're also just like a team that, you know, I think they are willing to sign Boris guys. So whenever guys come up that are eligible to be signed, they're like, all right, the Phillies got some money, right? But they end up retaining Aaron Nola as their big kind of expenditure for the offseason, which I think most Phillies fans are on board with. It might not have been, you know, the flashiest move, just keeping the guy that you've had.
It was the right move.
8 years, 9 years, whatever he's been around for. God, he's been around 9 years. It's crazy.
Yep. He's going to go down as the longest tenured Philly of all time.
Is that true?
He will have, if he does not get traded, he'll have been with the team longer than Schmidt, I believe.
That's crazy. So, but he's got to get to the end of his contract, I guess. But
yeah, he's got to get to the end of his contract.
Can get there. Yeah, because he was, Schmidt was 18 years.
So it's very likely he could go down as long as tenured Philly of all time.
So yeah, right there with Schmidt, at least, right there to the end. And then recently they announced they extended Zach Wheeler, which doesn't necessarily have to do with this season, but could be a signal of one, you know, hey, they explored the market. They really preferred keeping Wheeler at the price they were given, even if at $40+ million a year, then signing a Snell or signing Yamamoto. I mean, they definitely made an offer to Yamamoto, but.
Oh, yeah. They offered the most money to Yamamoto, but Yamamoto, he always wanted to be a Dodger. He was always going to be a Dodger.
But it definitely seems like the Phillies were looking around and thinking, okay, if Nola isn't here and Wheeler is here, or if Nola is signed and Wheeler goes away, like, what are our contingency plans? And they were definitely looking into these pitchers, which it seems like their kind of primary motivation this offseason. Other than that, I don't think there was a lot of other really big notes.
Other big moves were Spencer Turnbull.
Yeah. So
David Buchanan came back from Korea.
Kobe Allard?
Yeah, Kobe Allard. I don't think he's appeared in spring yet, though. Oh, no, he has. Allard was the other one. Whit Merrifield. Whit Merrifield was the big one.
I love that signing. Two-year deal. Was it 1 year deal, 2 year deal?
2 years.
2 year deal. So he'll be kind of their super utility guy.
Yeah.
Maybe play some outfield, play a little infield, I think just Swiss Army knife. And I think that was a good signing. I don't think he's an exciting player, but I think it's just he's a nice player to have.
I love Whit Merrifield. I'm glad they brought him in.
Yeah.
Great depth piece to the team. Overall, I'm happy with how the offseason went. I'm glad Wheeler was retained as well, because I would have been fine with losing Nola. Mm-hmm. I could not handle losing Wheeler, because I think Wheeler, he's just so much better. He's been so consistent.
Yeah. I think with Cole gone, I think you can certainly make the case that Wheeler is the best pitcher in baseball. I think Strider, which we'll talk about later, is in that mix, you know, but younger and maybe less just total, you know, we haven't seen it as long, right? So it's tough to say.
The nice thing about the Wheeler contract is it's not a 7-year deal. It's a 3-year extension, and you get out of it once he starts hitting those late 30s. Because I would say he definitely has at least 3 years left at this level before I start being concerned.
And who knew that we would be like, oh yeah, Zach Wheeler, just lock him in for like 200 innings every year.
He initially signed with the Phillies, everyone was like, this is a horrible signing. Hmm. And it's turned out to be the biggest bargain in baseball.
Yeah, it's been, I think an Athletic writer made the case that it's the best value starting pitching contract of the last, you know, couple of decades. And it's basically competing with Max Scherzer, who signed a contract twice as big.
Yeah.
You know, and then someone like Greg Maddux, you know, it's like, these are the guys he's competing with. And, you know, but based on the market, he was making a lot less than those guys were. So, like I said, hard to argue. And I, as someone that roots against the Phillies, obviously, he is the guy that scares me the most on that team, you know, outside of the Bryce Harpers of the world. You know, Nola is a really good pitcher, but he can kind of have it or not. Zach Wheeler just has it more than he doesn't. And when he has it, it's really
John Smoltz. I remember really this. It was in the World Series, he broke down Wheeler's delivery and the arm angle and how it all works. And he was like, it's incredible how consistent Wheeler is with his arm angle and getting pitches over the plate.
You can see it too. You know, it's just,
and he's got a split. He's got a splitter now. That's really nasty. Big guy to retain.
I was just going to ask, after another season, they beat the Braves, but again, come up just a little short of, you know, kind of going over the hump.
Yeah.
Kind of, what's your kind of perspective on what's a successful season for them now? I mean, it kind of feels like they
it's World Series or bust this year.
And beat the, and make it to the World Series and win. Like, they've done everything else, you know?
Yeah. This has to be the year they do it. Because I worry that, like, I still think they'll be good next year, but I think you're going to get the most production out of Schwarber, Castellanos, and those guys this year. And I think, like, this is the year they got to do it. And if they don't do it, like, you don't have as much money next year to go and get a Juan Soto or someone like that.
They're kind of locked in their team, which is a big part of the thing.
Schwarber and Castellanos for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, Schwarber's final year is next year. Castellanos is the year after that. And then you'll have that money back. But who knows what the free agent market's going to look like at that time. So, like, in my mind, this is the year you have to do it. DeBrowski was smart enough to leave some money open for the trade deadline to go and get a bullpen piece or a starter or a bat if need be. But this is the same roster that made the World Series 2 years ago, that made it to the NLCS last year, just missing Reese Hoskins. Like, that's the guy they're missing. But it's relatively the same roster.
Yeah. As far as the guys that I had listed here, I think Johan Rojas in center field is, he made everything work for them last year. Like, yeah. I really didn't treat them seriously just because of how tragic their defense was. And when Rojas came in and was able to hit, he was able to hit a little bit, but really he just came in and played a great defensive center field. It just made everyone else fall into place when Kyle moved from left field to DH, and then it became, okay, Harper seems competent at first base. They have a real center fielder, and Kyle Schwarber doesn't have to worry about playing defense, and everything just started clicking, and it all turned, you know, it just all worked exactly like he'd wanted it to, you know, and he made a couple plays in the playoffs. I think for him, it's just a matter of how good is his bat really, because we don't really have a full view on what that is, right?
And they I think there's a chance. I think there's a chance he starts in AAA.
You do think there's a chance he starts in AAA.
I think Pache's the opening day center fielder.
Well, that's not good.
Yeah.
I'm just going to throw that out there.
But Pache's, here's the thing. If you're focused, you're worried about defense, Pache's defense is right up there with Rojas.
Absolutely. But it's kind of like Rojas's upside.
And Pache's had a decent spring, too.
Pache, you know, basically make him irrelevant. Pache, you know, obviously a much bigger prospect pedigree.
Yeah.
Still really young. I think he's as young, or, you know, almost as young as Rojas. Rojas a couple years younger. But I maybe throw in Pache as kind of a 1B there, where it's like the Phillies need to have consistent center field play to be viable. Because if they have to move Marsh over there, and then it's like, hey, Kyle, you good for left field today? It's like,
Whit would be the left fielder.
Yeah. It's just, but then you're start looking at, it's like, it doesn't, the offense isn't really going to pack a punch, you know, at that point. So, I'm very curious to see how that shakes out. And he's very clearly talented enough to do it, but if he can just be a decent enough nine hitter and play great defense, it's good enough for this team.
Yeah. I think Rojas might just spend the first 2 weeks in AAA. Hey, let's keep working the swing, and it'll come back up. I think it'll just be Pache, Marsh, starting out there in center and left, which, again, still a very good defensive configuration you got there. They also brought in Jordan Luplo on a minor league deal.
after the Braves, you're just like, sorry, Jordan.
Yeah, so it's going to be fun to watch Luplo with the Pigs this year. And David Dahl, too. The Pigs are going to have a fun outfield.
Luplo hit like a rocket the other day that was just like so sick. And then they immediately signed Adam Duvall. And it's like, oh, well.
Yeah.
All right.
But my guys, so I'm going to start. I've got a few guys. I'm going to start with the daycare. More importantly, Stott and Marsh. I think this is going to be, especially Stott, this is going to be an all-star season for Stott. I think Stott is an all-star for the Phillies this year. He was really good last year, especially defensively. And I think the bat's going to take a step forward next year. And Marsh is also another guy that just like continues to get better. And I think he's going to look really good. Pitching wise, Orion Kerkering is going to be a beast out of the pen.
Yeah.
That dude has like one of the nastiest sliders I've seen in a long time.
And I believe it. I've seen it.
Dude, this spring he's looked good. He's going to be filthy out of the pen. Yep. I'm excited to see what a full season of Chris Sanchez looks like.
Sanchez was the other one that I was really noting.
I feel a lot better about that trade now after the year he had last year.
Yeah, it's turned into a kind of a shockingly even one if Curtis Meade turns out well.
Yeah, so he's another guy I like. And then in the minors, I'm so excited to see Micah Bell or Abel pitch for the Pigs this year. I think he's going to be a legit major league starter. I think it's just a matter of let's get Taijuan Walker the hell out of here so he can have a spot in the future.
Get him the hell out of here.
Yeah. But I feel good about the Phillies this year. It's exciting.
Yeah, there's no reason to feel bad about them. I think it's just the concern there is, you know, they are who they are, and there is not a lot of ways to change that.
No.
You know, there you can obviously bargain bin shop and shift around some key things, but
sure.
But they're locked into these guys. Big addition. You know, there's no big additions here. You know, this is a big addition.
It's a reliever. That's going to be their big addition.
Yeah. So. You know, we shall see. Let's move on to God's protagonist, the Atlanta Braves.
Oh, that's not the Dodgers.
That's true. I just stole it. You know, Braves, not much to say here as far as, like, you know, their expectations or whatever. They were a dominant team last year. They just kind of had some bad luck, hit at the wrong time against the Phillies, you know, like, again. But... you know, they had an injury to Charlie Morton where he couldn't pitch. And, you know, when Bryce Elder is coming in against Bryce Harper, I just want to give
it
up.
It doesn't end well.
Bryce Elder is like not locked into a starting job anymore. We'll talk about what they did. The Braves offseason was basically, you know, they didn't have a, we speculated like, or should they show Shohei Ohtani? And I really just never thought they were going to go.
I was terrified for a bit there.
I thought it might have been. Really, I think the Aaron Nola thing was legitimate. Like, I think they probably checked in on the starters, but I just don't think
they made a bigger offer to Nola than the Phillies, but gave less years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which they like to do. You know, they like to, you know, figure out kind of sweet spots. The older guys get them shorter, the younger guys go long.
Yeah.
But they basically turned a 40-man roster over as far as, like, the last 15 spots on their roster just vanished in, like, 3 weeks. Like, there was that gigantic 5-for-1 trade where they got back Aaron Bummer, and it's like, we talk about Preller doing all this stuff, but Anthopoulos really loves these, like, really strange roster moves that people are like, what is going on here? Like, you can see what they're doing. It's just so peculiar. You know, when they're trading 3 first round picks in the last few years, but it's like all guys that are either hurt or underperformed, or, you know, like, hey, we can get a reliever that's really good and going to help us win a World Series. And we're just going to do that, you know, and it's going to make sense money wise, going to make sense roster wise. And that's just the way it is. It's just strange, you know. So they got Bummer. It's kind of their, I don't want to call it a blockbuster. It was just a large trade.
It was a big trade.
Bring back
guys.
Joe Jimenez and Pierce Johnson on contracts, and they bring in Reynaldo Lopez, who has pitched most of the last year as a good reliever. He was part of the Angels kind of weirdness last year, you know, the sign him and or trade for him and dump him and, you know, all that stuff that with Lucas Giolito. But the Braves seem to think that he could be maybe a starter to begin the season as like, hey, to get our money's worth here, let's have you throw some innings and, you know, throw your 98 mile an hour fastball in a few innings, and maybe we can transition you back to the bullpen later. So it's going to be kind of an interesting experiment there. And then a little bit later into the offseason, they struck and they got Chris Sale from the Red Sox. And Chris Sale has been obviously, like, you know, struggling with injury stuff. It really has never been about, is he okay? You know, as far as his stuff, it's just like, dude could not stay healthy to save his life. But I don't know if this is just the change of scenery, but it definitely feels kind of a vibe shift around Chris Sale where people are like, I can see a good year. You know, it's like it kind of feels like people are buying into it more than buying out of it, which is strange for a guy that has missed most of these last few years. So they trade out Vaughn Grissom for him. And in the middle of all that money madness they were doing was triggered by their trade for Jared Kelenic, which is basically like a salary dump. So they've added Kelenic in left field, who has recently announced will platoon. He struggled in spring training, but I think it's more of a, you know, we just wanted to check and we'll give you an opportunity if you need it. But I think they're just, you know, hey, let's take a guy like Duvall for cheap. You know, I get it. Yep. But a really peculiar offseason for them, where they objectively definitely improved, but in just very odd ways. You know, it's like only ways that some.
It was definitely the most weird Braves offseason I've seen in a long time.
Yeah. It's one of the weirdest offseasons you're ever going to see. It just happens to be from the best team in baseball. You know, it's very odd.
Yeah.
And you know, like I said, lots of moves where it's like, okay, they improved here, but it's like, what is Sale in 2024? What is Jared Kelnick in 2024? What are all these random relievers who we all have seen for years now? They're all a bunch of veteran relievers. What are these guys now? Is Tyler Matzek back? You know, so lots and lots of really interesting kind of maneuvers. You know, they got David Fletcher just kind of kicking around. He had a good spring. I think he's probably going to make the roster as a, you know, the backup infielder, but they got guys that can knock him out of those spots. They got Luis Guillorme. So it's like, you know, very intentional about this stuff to a degree that feels almost like you said, it feels like a video game, like, you know, out of the park baseball or something, right? Where you're just like making all these strange random moves.
I want to make this trade. Hey, why not? Or it's like, you see the trade show up in your inbox and you're like, yeah, sure, I'll accept that. That seems fun.
Yeah. Let me just add in, you know, our first round pick from last year who we don't like very much anymore. And, you know, we'll trade for Aaron Bummer and we'll retain some salary, of course. It's like, all right, we're just throwing a bunch of random things like that. But, you know, I don't think there's really much to say. I think it's a great team. I don't think there's any other way around it. Acuna's knee was a little balky, but like, I think he'll be fine. You know, if not now, then very soon. Like, he's hitting, you know, he hit today and fielded today, I think. So if there's any, you know, possible downside, maybe Acuna doesn't have the greatest year on earth, but it's not like they really need it. You know, as long as he hits in October, it doesn't really matter. So I guess the question is just like, you know, I don't know, like, how do you just get over the hump again? You know what I mean? They got over the hump with a strange team a couple years ago. But it seems like they just committed all their resources to not like, hey, we need a guy to pitch 150 innings, but like, no, we need a guy to pitch 6 innings against the Phillies on October 10th.
Yeah.
You know, and we need a guy that could throw 97 out of the pen from the left side against the Dodgers on October 12th, you know, and it just seems like every move they made had that intentionality to it of, you know, we need him to try to up our upside as far as like this random spot, you know. So it's really bizarre.
I don't know how you get over it, especially if the Braves and Phillies are matched up again in the playoffs, which dude, I don't know about you, I can't do 3 years of this.
I would really love to not do that.
I would love if we didn't do that. Like, you guys have fun with whatever other wild card team and we'll handle the Dodgers. Like, I'd rather not go through another Phillies Braves playoff series to, it's not fun, especially on Twitter. It's a miserable time. Especially
on Twitter.
Dude, I got into so many arguments with other Braves fans. It's like, holy shit. It's not fun. I don't know how to get over that hump if they're matched up with the Phillies again. Because the Phillies feel like they're designed to beat the Braves in the playoffs. Like, aside from game two, the Phillies not only were able to handle their pitching, but they shut that lineup down.
Yeah.
Like, they really did a good job at shutting the lineup down. So, like, yeah. I don't know how to get past that.
Yeah. I mean, I do think some of it is just like, you know, I hate to say roll of the dice, because it wasn't like Phillies go lucky. You know, that's not what I'm trying to say, but
no,
things just come together in the right time in the right place. And, you know,
it's,
I think
weird that's been one two years in a row.
Just 2 years in a row where the same thing happens, just in kind of a different way. I do think, you know, the random injuries they had at the end of the season were really a big factor. Like I said, going from Charlie Morton to Bryce Elder is a giant deal, even if Charlie Morton is not, you know, your number one pitcher. You know, Max Fried was out for a lot of the year. I don't think he really had it. You know, I think he was dealing with a blister or something like that. There's just small things
that can lead to him. Like, but like the offense shutting down was the weirdest thing to me, because they
I was just going to say, the game where I think it was Strider versus Wheeler, right? Like, I think that they had a game four. Where, Yeah, and it was amazing. Like, they were, like, great. And, you know, it's just, like, neither of them could hit. You know, it's just, like, one run.
Was that NOLA game four?
I forget who it was. But, like, Strider, you know, after being, like, he was the one that got randomly hurt in 2022 and then got beat up by Rhys Hoskins. And then he comes in 2023 and was great. But, again, it's just, like, you know, like, random small things, and he takes – two losses.
That's why October baseball's so weird, because the Phillies have never beaten Strider in the regular season. Strider has never beaten the Phillies in the playoffs. Like, it's baseball's so weird, man. 0-3.
It was game one where he was like lights out and then lost.
Yeah, so I think Ranger. That was Ranger. Strider. Yeah.
And in the second one, I think he let up like a home run late, and then that was
he gave up. Was it three?
Yeah, I think it was a couple of home runs.
He gave up two to Castellanos and one to Turner.
Yeah, and it was also, I think it was all solo home runs. But there it is. Three home runs, three earned runs. So just small things like that, you know, but the offense couldn't get going either. So, but like, you can't say the offense needed to improve. You
know? No.
They have probably the best offense in baseball.
Yeah,
and I think everyone pretty much still say that, unless you think Shohei Ohtani puts the Dodgers over top, which... Oh no, they're the second best offense in baseball. You know what I mean? It's like, it's only so much you can do. So, I don't know if there's any more to say. I think most people are going to have them winning the division, which I think they should. You could have the Phillies if you want, but I think 99% of people or 90% of people are going
to
have the Braves.
Here's the thing. The Phillies are going to have to get over that early season hump that they always run into.
The Braves,
if they don't start out slow, we're going to have a great NL East race. They start out slow again. Braves are going to win it.
Is there any guy on the Rays roster that you are particularly interested in? Obviously, they're returning most of the same guys, but anything that jumps out to you?
I mean, he's an established guy, but Michael Harris.
Yeah.
I think Michael Harris is going to have a big year. He's going to hit that next year, this year.
It's funny thinking about how awful him and Marcell Ozuna were for like the first 2 months of the season. Michael Harris had a sub-500 OPS June, and he finished as like what, the second, third best center fielder in the league, just because he just hit the crap out of the ball. And he obviously had the one postseason success they had this last year was that just like one of the great defensive plays you'll ever see in the playoffs. Like, it's such a bummer that was the only win they had, but that is one of the most exciting moments I've ever experienced.
Insane, dude, because I was watching Harper go, I'm like, oh man, they're gonna tie it here, and then like.
Yeah.
Got it's like, him. It's just like, dude, just he's there. Insane.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously excellent there. And this is going to be my guy, but Spencer Strider has notably added a curveball.
That's filthy.
His repertoire. And, you know, again, spring training doesn't necessarily matter that much, but he has just been like gross.
He hasn't allowed a run.
Yeah. And just like striking out everyone, which is what you'd expect. And I think most people view Spencer as an elite starting pitcher now. But it is notable when an elite starting pitcher adds something that could make him better. So I'm really, really excited to see that in action.
Strider versus Wheeler splitter. Can't wait.
Yeah.
That's the opening day matchup.
Are we playing the Phillies first week again?
Opening day in Philadelphia.
What is wrong with y'all?
Strider versus Wheeler.
How many times have we done this?
Too many times.
I feel like half the seasons start in Philly. Like, am I crazy?
No, because it happened in 19.
I feel like it happened in 19 and like 21.
I know it happened in 19 because I was at that opening day.
Beat up and is anyway.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna complain. The guy I'm gonna highlight is just Tyler Matzek because he's coming back from Tommy John surgery and he's looked really good this spring. It looks like he's got his velocity back. Love the dude to death. Like, he's a postseason legend for the Braves, and you know, there's a chance when someone goes through an injury like that after the career he's had. You know, he was really came out of nowhere. You know, he was a busted first round pick that kind of left and came back and reemerged as this kind of fastball throwing machine. And you know, I think there's a chance that if the Braves do have another edge to him, it's that their bullpen could be the best in baseball by even like a little bit like a healthy amount, which is kind of like, I hate to project a bullpen that much, but they have so many guys that would be a setup man for other teams, and they could Theoretic could pitch these guys in the fifth inning, you know, if they need to.
Absolutely.
Like Matic might be the sixth most important reliever in their bullpen.
Yeah.
You know, because you got Bummer, Iglesias, Jimenez, Johnson, Dylan Lee, who's getting in that, like, you know, might be up and down, but still has had a lot of success. AJ Minter, who's in his last year as a Brave. Like, you even got Huascar Ulloa, who's kind of like kicking around, who could be a factor, you know, coming back from his surgery. So they just loaded up in the bullpen. I think Tyler Matzik coming back into it is really significant. I'm really excited for him just as like a person.
Definitely.
Contribute. Let's move on to the Mets.
Yeah, oh God.
Favorite team, the Mets.
I hate them.
I hate them. So they obviously tore down a lot of the spending that they did last year, and they kind of left themselves this year as kind of like a recovery year because they're still paying Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer these gigantic, you know, contracts on other teams. They did make some moves kind of on the fringes, like we were describing some of the teams. They grabbed Harrison Bader for center field. They're going to move Brandon Nimmo over, I believe, to right field, maybe left field. I forget what their exact plan is there. They signed Luis Severino to a one-year deal. They signed Sean Manaea, I think, to a two-year deal, if I'm not mistaken. And probably their biggest thing this season is that they have Edwin Diaz back, which was such a big deal for them.
Huge.
Not having him last year, and I think he pitched for the first time yesterday or today and was struck out the side. You know, so I think
he's back. He's
going to be just fine. So the trumpets will be blaring at Citizens Field, but I mean, just I don't think it requires too much. We clearly don't view them in the same category as the Braves and Phillies, but I think it's interesting because like they're kind of in a weird spot because they don't kind of running out of time with a few certain dudes like Pete Alonso or whatever. Like, right. Do you think they're competitive enough to kind of be in the wild card hunt, even if they can't?
Absolutely not.
Stay with the Braves and Phillies.
No, absolutely not.
Just out on them.
Pete Alonso is going to be traded at the deadline. That's where I'm at with them.
It'd be a really exciting trade deadline guy.
Yeah. I don't like they got that rotation's bad, and I don't even think Senga's starting the year with the team, is he?
No, he has some like shoulder injury, which
he's got a shoulder injury.
I probably would have felt better about it if he was there because I think he's like a genuine.
Jose
like,
Quintana is your opening day starter. Congratulations.
Is he really?
He likely is going to be, yeah. If I pull up the Mets real quick here and look at their rotation depth, I can tell you. So here we go.
I guess.
New York Mets roster, 40 man.
None of the guys I feel good about.
Depth chart. So Kodai Senga, mm-hmm. He's injured. And then you have Luis Severino on the depth chart, mid. Jose Quintana, mm-hmm. mid. Sean Manaea, mid. Adrian Hauser, mid. Tyler McGill, mid. Jose Buto, but if you spell his name, it's Butto. Butt. Joey Lucchese, minors. David Peterson, 60-day injury list. There's your Mets pitching staff depth chart.
Not good.
That's not good. They scream 70-win team to me.
70?
Oh, dude, they're going to be
very
bad.
Out.
They're going to be bad.
I was going to say they're like an 82. They're like exactly. They feel like the most average team on the planet to me. Lindor is great. Alonso's good. You know, they have like Nimmo. As much as I hate the dude's guts as a good player, although him moving off.
I hate him. He's not good.
I just can't stand him. I'm never going to give him true respect. I hate the dude.
Just put a White House in front of him and he'll run there real quick. He's not good.
I do like Francisco Alvarez. If I had to pick a guy on this roster that I really want to highlight, it would be him.
Yeah.
He had kind of a really interesting first season where he didn't hit super great, but you could see the power. Obviously, he's kind of like a supercharged version of who's the dude for the Blue Jays that everyone's infatuated with. What is that?
Kirk.
Kirk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like he's kind of short and stocky. Maybe not as short as Kirk, but he's
5'10"
under the ball. Yeah, you know, like he's kind of a bulky 5'10", you know, but he hits the ball really well. He seems to be kind of a high power, low average guy right now, but I think if that can tick up very easily. you know, this season. And I think the biggest thing for him last year is he proved he can play catcher, which, you know, is always a question with these guys. Like, we see this new guy is like, man, this guy can really hit. Is he a catcher? You know?
Yeah.
And I think he firmly proved he can do it.
Yeah.
And he got 130 games in his rookie year. So, like, really impressive there. So can he make one step up with the bat? Kind of like we were describing with your Volpe, right? Like,
yeah,
there's a lot of rookies last year where, like, they set a foundation for success. They just need to kind of now make that next step.
Yeah, I agree. I like him. I like Francisco Alvarez a lot. I don't like anyone else on this team other than Brett Batty.
I say Batty.
Yeah, I like Batty. I think he's gonna be all right. He looked solid his rookie year.
Hey, you want to check again?
Oh, never mind. Yeah, no, you're right. This team sucks, dude. I'm done talking about the Mets. Let's move on. You know what I mean? Mets stands for my entire team sucks anyway, so this is the Mets.
At least he's not as bad as who's that dude who's going to start at DH for them who can't hit? Mark Vientos.
Oh, Vientos. Yeah, dude. What a choice.
And then, of his good appearances this spring.
And then your other option's DJ Stewart.
Shout out DJ Stewart.
Or Tyrone Taylor.
They do have Joey Wendell. We love Joey Wendell. That's not a joke.
I do love Joey Wendell. I wish he was on another team.
It's nothing but the best for Joey. Marlins basically just opted out of participating this offseason.
Yeah, they didn't do any. Did they?
They functionally did nothing until they signed Tim Anderson to play shortstop. Oh, which
that's right.
I think makes sense. You know, like I get it. It's a good fit. There's no way Tim Anderson's as bad as he was last year. There's just no chance.
You'll be surprised. You know?
Like, it's just impossible to me. Even if he's bad again, there's no chance he's that bad. So just try it out. But they moved on from Kim Ng, which I think turned out to be kind of like a, you know,
I think that was a stupid decision.
Like, you know, we want to pay you less, or like we want to do some different things. And she's probably just like, well, that kind of sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah.
They're not going to have Sandy Alcantara this year because of Tommy John surgery.
They're likely not going to have Yuri Perez this year.
Please don't say that.
I don't like the sound of him having an elbow specialist.
I don't like it either. Maybe Sixto can come in.
Dude, and, can you imagine Sixto making the rotation?
I'm not gonna look at his spring stats.
No, let's look at his spring stats.
In the spring?
Yes.
Like for real though?
Four appearances, six innings, no runs allowed.
Oh my god.
Sixto Sanchez might make the Marlins opening day roster.
Please.
Especially because Edward Cabrera might be out for the season too.
Is he hurt too? Oh my god.
He's hurt too.
Dialing Blake Snell.
Everyone's elbow decided to explode at the same time.
Yeah.
So, except for Sixto Sanchez's.
They still have Luis Arraez. They still have the GOAT, John Birdie. They're going to have
Meyer
guys
looks
like Vidal Brujan in here. You know, kind of like there's a couple guys like that are kind of work toward jobs or like try to make the, you know, team and try to be like reestablish themselves after being kind of top prospects. Nick Gordon's kind of in that boat. What was his hot take that
the moon isn't real?
Was it just the moon though? I feel like it was even weirder than that. But well, I guess the moon not being real is like actually really funny.
Yeah.
the moon
incredibly
real. Yeah, because usually it's like, oh, the moon landing isn't real, and he's just
this is just straight up the moon is not real.
But yeah, there's not a lot to say here. I mean, what do they do? Like, what is their upside here?
They opt out of the season and just hope their pitchers can develop. I mean, Max Meyer has looked really good this spring coming back from injury.
They've had a lot of really good pitching performances.
Yeah, Trevor Rogers has looked solid this spring, and he's going to be back in a rotation. So, like, Jesus Luzardo is still there. So, like, they've got... This is their biggest strength is the pitching depth. They've got dudes there, but like, man, do they not have much else?
Yeah. The hitting is just, they're desperate for a couple breakouts out of nowhere.
Jake Berger has looked like garbage all spring, which is a shame because I'm I'm absolutely rooting for him.
Yeah. And they made a couple moves mid-season last year, right? That I'm sure like him and Josh Bell, like they anticipate being big parts of this year's team, which is totally viable. I'm not pooping on that as a, you know, but like when you don't do anything notable and you just lose Solaire, and that's basically, you know, you lose Sandy, you lose Solaire, and then you're like, well,
we gave it a try.
There's not any way for me to drum up excitement on that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna read two players starting pitching lines.
Okay.
This spring. Because I think it's notable in the way you're describing these random guys who have been doing well.
Sure.
First guy here, 8.1 innings, 6 hits, 0 runs, 15 strikeouts, 4 walks. So that's 15 strikeouts and 8.1 innings, and these are in starts. So that's a 16.2 strikeouts per nine.
That's AJ Puke. Puck.
That's AJ Puck. I know
they've been trying him out as a starter.
A starting pitcher. And then this guy, 1.32 ERA in 4 games, 13.2 innings, some more innings there, 17 strikeouts, 8 hits, 3 walks. So, you know, pretty dominant. 11 strikeouts per nine, 2 walks per nine. Any idea who that is? Another lefty.
Lefty. Isn't Braxton Garrett a lefty?
It's Ryan Weathers.
Quietly
acquired from the Padres, I think, as part of that, you know, Josh Bell and what was the Ryan Weathers swap part of? Is that Garrett Cooper?
Maybe. I forget who that was.
I think that was maybe the trade he was in. Yeah, Garrett Cooper and Sean Reynolds. So Marlins got him. He's been really good this spring. So again, like, spring does not mean everything, but he's 24. He made the majors as like a 20-year-old or 21-year-old as the Padres, you know, Preller zone. And never really found it after his first year. The Marlins, maybe, you know, since they could find something. So if there's anything to note about this team, is that they seem to have a strategy with their pitchers that seems interesting. Whether that turns out to be anything notable, I have no idea. But Puck and Weathers could end up making impacts as starters this year, which I'm sure is, they'd prefer to be a storyline than other things.
Oh yeah. I just think it's insanely funny. Sixto Sanchez's spring line. And that I think he's making the Marlins opening day roster.
I see a world
where it happens.
Yeah.
And it's gonna be objectively incredibly funny.
He did make Pitching Ninja today with a slider.
God, that's so wild. And he's like 300 pounds now, isn't he?
Like, he's not that big, but
he's a big boy. He's a big boy right now.
Large lad.
Yeah, he's no longer 6-0, he's 7-0.
He's 8-0.
8-0, yeah.
96, 95, yeah, so, you know, we can see.
See him.
Yeah. We are all sixnesses is what I just read. Final team in our NL East, or, you know, East previews broadly, is the Washington Nationals. You know, I think most of the action we are interested in for the Nationals is not on the major league roster right now, but is very close. We have seen a couple of mammoth home runs from James Wood, their star right fielder prospect, you know, center field, right field. Added Dylan Cruz in the draft, who just immediately becomes like, all right, when is this guy going to debut? He's ready to go. We all know. I think they made a couple moves, like, you know, kind of like you'd expect a rebuilding team to do. They added Joey Gallo, who I think they might play some outfield and first base. But yeah, not really too much different there. I don't think anyone really takes them too seriously as a, you know, as a 2024 team. I think it's just like, all right, the Nationals have built this kind of really interesting, you know, minor league system very quickly. And when are these guys ready to roll? I think is really what everyone's waiting for.
And I think both Woods and Cruz are up this year.
Yeah, I think so too. I think Cruz is just natural. You know, I think he's just got it. It's just not going to be an issue for him adapting. and Wood, you know, needs time, obviously. But I think, you know, some of these guys that have these strikeout rates just need time in certain spots, you know, to develop. Like maybe he starts in Double A again, and Double A looks a lot different for him than it did last year. Sure. I always mention with when guys like these, like Austin Riley was someone that needed, like, he needed a full step and then adjustment period, full step adjustment period, you know? Some guys don't jump up from high A to Major League Baseball, you know, like Juan Soto. So I think James Wood could be someone, if that strikeout rate goes down, the power goes up, you know, in Double A and then Triple A, we could definitely see him. And then Cruz, I think it's just a matter of, like, it, I don't think you need to see anything other than just, like, do it, you know, just go out there, be Dylan Cruz. And if he's decent enough, we'll see him eventually. It might just come down to him being healthy and them having a spot to play him. But anyone else really jump out as far as this year's roster for you on their front?
Mackenzie Gore. Yep. I think the Mackenzie Gore breakout happens this year.
He's had an interesting ride so far. He has. I feel like he's been okay.
Yeah.
But just not all together yet, you know?
Like, we look at, a lot of people look at ERA as, like, it's not good. But, like, there were times where I watched Mackenzie Gore pitch last year that I thought, okay, there's that potential that people looked at and thought, yeah, this dude's going to be a top prospect. And, like, I saw that in him a couple times last year. I truly think this year, big breakout season for him.
Yeah.
Especially,
you know, I've liked him for a long time.
Yeah. So I really like Gore coming into this season, and, you know, he's trying to figure out the walk thing, and if he figures that out, like, he's going to be good. And, you know, he's only 25 years old. So this is the time that breakout for pitchers really starts to come. So if he breaks out, I think Josiah Gray takes another step forward as well. He looked solid last year, and I think it's time for that step forward to come this year. Hitting side, between Kybert Ruiz and CJ Abrams, I think Kybert showed a lot last year.
Yeah. So he didn't really play catcher. He's a very strange guy.
He's very strange, but I think the bat's going to take another step forward.
Yeah, if he can take one step up with the bat as, like, a overall hitter, I think he's got something going on. It's just he needs that next step, or else he's going to be in a kind of a tricky position. CJ Abrams is actually going to be the guy I was going to highlight. He had a really tough go at the start of the season. He was one of those guys that, like, if you look at when he was traded and the amount of time he got in the minor leagues, like, he basically, the pandemic hit guys his age as hard as anyone could have possibly been hit, because he lost all of 2020 as he was probably going to go to, like, high A. Right, so he goes from A ball in 2019 as an 18-year-old, then reemerges in 2021 at age 20 playing shortstop for Double A, right, and still hits well, and, you know, hits well in Triple A. But, like, he goes over the Nationals after, you know, the Padres are already playing him in the major leagues, plays 2022, the end of Nationals is terrible. Starts out the year not good, especially on defense, just doesn't look like he has it. And then just everything clicks at some point in the season. I don't know when it was exactly, but it just started becoming a lot easier for him.
After the All-Star break.
Yeah, it just started all coming together. You know, there were flashes here and there, but then I think that All-Star break time, you know, he was able to play a legitimate shortstop, and there was a lot of power. I think he hit 18 home runs last year.
Yeah, and a lot of them came over the second half.
I guess he technically wasn't a rookie, but, you know, for all intents and purposes, this was his, like, true rookie year after, you know, his development cycle. After hitting, I don't think he had hit that in his entire career as a professional.
No.
No, and he stole 32 bags. I was like, 47 bags.
47,
And so he seems to be, like, a legitimate, like, weapon. You know, he still has, again, kind of another step to take as far as the bat and the consistency.
Yeah.
But when you show that many things and that many tools and bits of athleticism in different parts of his game, I think that could be a real home run before James Wood even gets there, as far as when you're looking at the Juan Soto trade. I think CJ has like a lot of potential, and he's a really exciting guy, you know. And if you can have someone that's that exciting bridge that gap and be like, okay, he doesn't have to be your star, right? But he can be a supplementary star, or supplementary, really solid player. I think he's got really, really intense upside. I think he's really struggled with the fastball, if I'm reading all this right. Like, I think that's just basically his problem, is he just can't turn on the fastball yet. But if he can get to that point, I think he's a really good shortstop. And you can have a good shortstop and you're a bad team, like, that's a great place to start.
That's a good place to start.
You're clearly not going to have to worry about the outfield.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's basically locked up at this point. So,
yeah.
And CJ, this is a fantasy baseball thing, but I'm just like, I'm all in on CJ Abrams this year as like a really valuable fantasy baseball player.
I completely agree.
Yeah. I'm really excited for him. So I think we're mostly in agreement here, but, I think we view those top two teams as the playoff teams. I don't see much of a way that they don't make it. Maybe the Phillies have a tough start, but that's still kind of.
I mean, it's like the only way I don't see the Phillies making it is Bryce going down.
Yeah, someone getting hurt. You know, Braves could have a couple guys get hurt, and I would not take them out of the playoffs. So I guess the question is just like, do you think most people are going to have the Braves winning? Phillies taking up maybe the first or second wild card. Do you think the Phillies will beat the Braves, or do you think it's going to be another, you know, like Phillies get into the wild card and then have to shove it up the Braves' ass after that?
Man, it's all going to depend on how they start out the season for me. Going with my gut, I think they're just the top wild card team again, and host the wild card games at home.
Yep.
And then here we go again, Braves Phillies in the freaking playoffs, and I want to shoot myself.
Just please get them in. Like I said, just get them in a different bracket. Like
give me the Dodgers. Spots.
Like yeah, like make it interesting. Like
we always beat the Dodgers too. So like,
you just can't be the damn Diamondbacks. But yeah, so I think the NL East is maybe a little less interesting than normal. It's just, but two Titans kind of going out. It's fun, and you know the Mets are capable of stuff.
Two of the three best teams in the NL are in. Then at least,
like, yeah. So it's great to have. It's just like kind of strange that the Mets have this giant bloated payroll, but the players they're paying aren't really playing for them.
This.
So, all right. So that was about 2 hours. I'll give ourselves a pat on the back for that. It wasn't too bad. Yeah, we made things easier for ourselves. So I hope you guys enjoyed kind of our look at those divisions. Our last ones will be the West, and I think those will be fairly straightforward as well. So I think hopefully we can continue to just hit the, you know, kind of major points. But you know, we talked about some exciting teams, and I think I'm really excited to see these teams in action.
Definitely.
The next time we talk, like I said, it will be technically the regular season will have begun.
Yes, it will.
Only in Korea at 6 a.m. But the Dodgers, the Padres are actually playing right now against Korea, I believe, in a exhibition. Ha-Seong Kim hit a home run. I saw that, and Dylan Cease is pitching. So tie that in together.
Oh, there we go.
So they will be playing on Wednesday morning for two games on Wednesday and Thursday. And so that'll kind of tie into our West previews. We'll kind of get our first taste of the new Dodgers and the new Padres and whatever forms that they take. So that'll be a nice, especially with those two teams where I think lots of people just want to see how they look. That'll be really good. Hopefully, you know, I don't think we necessarily going to change our minds too much from it, but maybe the Padres look feistier than we think and, you know, whatnot. So, but Pat, thank you so much for joining us here today. You know, these are always fun, and got one more left.
Thank
and
you.
We can, the season's right here. We're almost
it's here.
There.
We're ready.
And Blake Snell's still not signed. So, we will leave it there. And thank you guys for listening to today's episode. Rain Delay Radio is produced by Lewis. I, Dylan, hosted this week's episode, and I was joined by Pat. Rain Delay Radio is edited by Nime, and our theme music was composed by Chuck Lease. Rain Delay Radio releases every Monday morning, and we will check you next week.
All right.